This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information, brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turf Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and the following are observations and recommendations for the week of August 13th, 2012. The prolonged growing season that began for many back in March is now rearing its ugly head. There are widespread reports of summer annual weed infestations of crabgrass and goosegrass. In fact, paspalum, not Dallas grass, is also emerging as a significant weed problem, likely related to the increased heat accumulation. In both cases, this is likely due to pre-emergent herbicide barriers breaking down. The persistent high temperatures are also wreaking havoc with turf roots that might have been infected early with summer patch or take-all patch. Additionally, many areas that have suffered in previous years, very wet last year, very hot the year before, may not have developed adequate root systems this year, and now any dry weather causing severe wilt or anthracnose. Finally, as cool season grass roots normally do die back due to high temperatures, these dying roots do not function and therefore water must be added more frequently. And this leads to an entirely different set of problems. There's no question that water management has been the key to success for many this year. And now any excess water, even from rainfall, can lead to rapid turf loss. Keep soils at the root zone moist, but keep the surface dry. Easy for me to say. Well, it was a very warm week with temps more than 5 degrees above normal, and this brought another week of high heat stress, mostly due to persistent high nighttime temperatures. We are right on last year's growing degree day total north of Philly and slightly behind last year's total south of Philly, still well ahead of the 15-year average with most 2 to 3 weeks ahead. Soils are in the upper 70s and mid to low 80s north to south. Between a half to 1 inch of rain fell across most of the region last week, with areas of southern New Jersey and Long Island receiving between 1 and 2 inches. Most of upstate New York across to Boston around a half an inch of ET was still very high, with most areas losing between 1 to 1.25 inch of water for the week. Widespread high risk for brown patch pythium and foliar anthracnose. The stormy weather will keep many areas hot and steamy, especially at night, that can lead to an array of foliar diseases. Not much to do for weeds at this time, as most summer annuals are past a controllable growth stage. Expect a wet and steamy start to the week, is the forecast, especially to the south. There'll be a significant warming trend this week, with very unsettled and stormy weather expected throughout the week. Overnight lows will be in the 60 to 70 range in the midweek, so there will be some persistent heat stress. The long-term models are calling for us being in a normal pattern for both temperature and rainfall, and you can check out all the previous weather information and predictive things at our forecast website. The Cornell Cooperative Extension Update begins with Emily Selleck and Lynn Wilson's Adirondack Report. As has been the case for the last few weeks, irrigated areas are flourishing, while non-irrigated areas remain dormant. Poa remains healthy, Japanese beetles out in full force this week, and a small outbreak of black cutworms last weekend. The Western New York report from Walt Nelson. Where scattered showers occurred in the last week, grass is green. Environmental conditions kicked crabgrass and goosegrass into high gear. Many seed heads are out at the boot, and a few have spread open. Fertilization contractors continued contract applications even on non-irrigated dormant lawns. Scatter reports of chinch bug damage. The Westchester report from Jerry Giordano. Weeds, weeds, and more weeds is the word in Westchester as landscapers and homeowners lament explosions of crabgrass, probably due to pre-emergent timing issues and other factors related to an extended season that began early. Bentgrass is performing its usual swan song by browning out under summer conditions, and paspalum, cetaceum, fringed leaf paspalum, has been identified in one lawn and is suspected on a much larger scale in another. The presence of penicetum in one turf sample is a reminder that some ornamental grasses have the propensity to become very coarse weeds in lawns. Sprinkler systems continue to be overused in curvial area. Fusarium blight, dollar spot brown patch, summer patch, and Rhizoctonia brown patch all showed up on one sample with brown patch evident on other samples. Scarab grubs have been reported on commercial accounts. The Eastern Long Island report from Tom Kowalsik and Tamsin Ye. Most areas on the east end of Long Island got approximately 1/3 to 1/2 inch of rainfall this week. Although you don't see a lot of dormant turf, you can certainly see weeds creeping into lawns that are stressed from heat. The diagnostic lab at Cornell Cooperative Extension of Suffolk County is receiving many inquiries on crabgrass and nutsedge growing in stressed turf. In addition to inquiries on weeds, they also had samples of dollar spot brought into the lab. Our regional update is from Randy Prostak, extension weed scientist at the University of Massachusetts. The long growing season has really challenged the persistence of pre-emergent herbicides applied at least 6 to 8 weeks before they would normally be applied. At this time, we're starting to see significant breakthrough in many areas where the existing turf is starting to thin from the summer and the herbicide barrier is breaking down. Keep in mind that in New York, plants that are less than 3 tiller can be controlled with a claim extra, but larger plants will not be easily controlled. There is some data that plants that germinate after July do not produce viable seed and serve to reduce the seed bank. However, this is little solace for those with crabgrass-infested areas. Beyond just an aesthetic problem, crabgrass and goosegrass create an environmental problem by leaving the ground bare in the spring. Therefore, it is critical to note areas and begin to prepare for renovating. The diagnostic update from the Director of Diagnostic Services at Rutgers University, Rich Buckley. Most years, the dog days of August bring a slowdown in turf submission as golf turf managers start to have visions of their aerification and renovation programs coming in a couple of weeks. After a moderate July for turf submissions, August has started with a bang. The increase in samples is arguably due to an increase in rain during late July. Locally heavy downpours provided as much as 8 inches in some areas. Adequate to excessive soil moisture, high night temperatures, high humidity, and serious fog are driving the disease triangle. Yesterday seemed like we had at least one sample of every disease in the compendium turf diseases. We've seen anthracnose, summer patch, take all, brown patch, dollar spot, slime molds, fairy rings, and pythium diseases in all forms. A note about pythium blight, or is it dollar spot? Did you ever wake up in the summer to see snow on your turf grass? The snow, of course, is fungal mycelium. This week we've seen it primarily in two forms, pythium blight and dollar spot. Both diseases start as small dead spots and fuzz up quite readily. So how do you tell which disease is which? Pythium blight causes a dark brown leaf blight, which may often manifest itself as black, greasy decline. Patches of pythium blight will grow rather large and coalesce into nondescript dead spots as large as several hundred square feet. Dollar spot, on the other hand, causes small dead spots with almost white leaf blight. Dollar spot also has a distinct leaf lesion that is often described as hourglass-shaped. When you see early morning snow on your turf in midsummer, both diseases should pop into your head as potential problems, but a closer look at the symptoms should easily narrow your focus. Gray leaf spot? By the way, folks are calling about gray leaf spot. So far, no disease in the lab. If you manage lots of ryegrass, however, the disease window runs until October, so keep your eyes wide open. My Gazing in the Grass update begins with a note about cicada killers. Cicada killer wasps are beneficial and do not pose danger in most cases. When possible, they should be left alone. The larvae pass the winter in their burrows and emerge the next July as adults. Between late July and mid-August, these new adults emerge, mate, and female digs new soil burrows, stocks them with cicadas, and the cycle is repeated. Adults usually die by mid-September. On occasion, a large nesting aggregation can result in many holes and unsightly mounds of soil in a smaller area of a yard or garden. Control of cicada killers is safely and most effectively done by placing a small amount of 5% carbaryl, dust down into the soil tunnel. For a large nesting aggregation, the area can be sprayed. In most cases, the tunnel entrances should be left open. Cicada killer wasps are beneficial and do not pose danger. When possible, they should be left alone. Mechanical damage. Mowers have been a large problem for turf areas this year. During the extreme dry weather, many landscape crews continued to mow drought-stressed turf, and now these areas have brown lines from the turf being crushed when very dry. Now we are seeing mechanical damage on putting green collars and cleanup passes around greens. The situation is made worse by increased moisture and persistent use of aggressive mowing tactics such as lower heights of cut and groove rollers. Additionally, be aware of your real position relative to bed knife. Being too aggressive at this time of year with the bed knife back from the center line of the reel can cause significant and often hinge stress. This often occurs deliberately with Toro hand mowers that provide this option or by design with reels that have reduced circumference as they are ground and worn. Leaf rusts are starting to be visible throughout the state in irrigated areas, and most folks extended the mowing interval. Mow heights above 1 inch, and the longer the leaf blades stay uncut, the greater potential for rust to become a problem. Fairway ryegrass trials mowed at 3/4 inch twice per week have little to no rust, while sports turf areas mowed at 2.5 inches or greater once per week are severely infected. This is one of the consequences of increased mowing heights. Ryegrass varieties such as rust resistance include Bright Star 2, Omega 3, Palmer 3, Sonata, Repel 3, Derby Supreme, and Edge. Dandelion and potassium fertilizers. Researchers from the University of Minnesota have shown how to control dandelion by modifying interspecific competition buying changes in nutrient supply rates. Analysis of effects of different patterns of fertilization on plant species abundant in the 140-year-old parkgrass experiment in Rothamsted, England, showed that dandelion populations were highly dependent on potassium fertilization and on liming, but not on addition of other nutrients. Potassium fertilization led to a 17 to 20-fold increase in dandelions. Liming led to a 2 to 3-fold increase for classical data. Second, in a greenhouse study in Minnesota, dandelion had a higher requirement for potassium and had its biomass more limited by potassium than any of the five common grass species of park grass. This suggests that dandelion may be a poorer competitor for potassium than these grasses, but this mechanism has not yet been tested. Third, in a series of Minnesota lawns that had not received fertilizer herbicide, both dandelion density and abundance were significantly positively correlated with tissue potassium levels. In summary, for soils with low potassium levels, the use of potassium-free lawn fertilizer is predicted to decrease dandelion because of competition from grasses like red fescue. A note about calcium silicate and disease. Calcium silicate applied to creeping bent grass had no effect on leaf silicon concentrations or dollar spot incidence. Thus, calcium silicate applications to soil containing adequate silica should not be recommended for control of brown patch on creeping bent grass grown on low silica soil or dollar spot on high silica soil. In fact, calcium silicate applications may exacerbate brown patch disease incidence, possibly because of nutrient imbalances. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.